Support for Here and Now comes from BetterHelp, committed to supporting mental health through therapy. Clients are matched with one of 25,000 therapists and can communicate via video, chat, or phone at betterhelp.com/public.
In fact, we can still hear him talking. Basically, he was saying that the demonstrations are going to continue, calling on people to remain in the square, making a direct reference to the Facebook campaign, saying that they will continue to use Facebook in order to publicize the demonstrations.
An Al Jazeera anchor interpreting a protest leader's instructions in packed Tahrir Square today. The internet is back on after the Egyptian government cut it off for a week and a half. But our next guest cautions, if Facebook is a way to organize protesters, it's also a tool for the government to crack down on them. Yesterday, a leading dissident blogger in Egypt, he goes by the name Sam Monkey, was arrested and briefly detained, his Twitter account hacked. What does the government now know, having seen his tweets? Yevgeny Morozov is contributing editor at Foreign Policy magazine. His new book is The Net Delusion, The Dark Side of Internet Freedom, something he's familiar with, having grown up in Belarus, a former Soviet republic, but still one of the most repressive governments. Yevgeny, welcome back to Here and Now.
Good to be here.
Give us just specific examples of governments using the internet against people.
Sure. Well, in Belarus, we actually have a secret service, which is still called the KGB, and they look to the social networking profiles of young activists to discover some of the other activists they might not know yet or among their friends. So often they would show up in a university, come and pick a student and then interrogate him or her and then say, well, we've learned everything about you from the social networking sites.
We also read that Syria has made a database from people who use Facebook. Do you have other examples?
Sure. Again, the examples here are numerous and they vary from surveillance with the government's turn to social networking sites to learn more about their users and dissidents to propaganda outlets. China, for example, is actively training bloggers and paying bloggers to go online and influence online conversations and steer them in pro-government direction. Iran, after the protests there in 2009, turned to sites like Flickr, where you post photos, and actually collected many of the photos from the protests, and they circled the faces of the people that they didn't know in Iran and published them on government-owned news sites and ask people to identify whoever they could recognize in the photos.
So taking photos off Flickr and asking people to identify them. In Russia, there's the thinking that this might be the new opiate of the masses, you know, concerns that the Kremlin might actually be producing shows online to distract people from politics, you know?
Well, this is happening as well. Again, I think there is this tendency to glamorize all users of the internet as dissidents in many of these countries. And that's just not the case. Many of them turn to the internet to watch movies, talk to each other, in many cases download pornography. In no way does it lead, in many cases, to politicization or, you know, fomenting of dissent.
Well, we spoke this week with a software company that's come up with, they actually work with the American government or are funded in part by the American government, and they've come up with the software Tor, T-O-R, which can block your trail on the internet so that governments can't go in and trace you back through posting. So there's some defenses, but still you're concerned. And we read of things coming out of Egypt that would seem to back your concern. The government there, for instance, just recently forcing the phone company Vodafone to send out pro-government text messages.
Yes. Well, I mean, what has happening in Egypt, I think, does show that when the government is in control, they can actively exploit the very same platforms and networks to spread propaganda or to force companies into behaving as the government would like them to. In a country like Belarus, again, where I come from, there were also huge protests in the big public square in last December following the elections. What is happening now is that the government is actually asking some of the mobile phone operators in Belarus for information about any of their subscribers that actually were on the square at that time, because that data can now be recovered by tracing their mobile phones. You could actually very easily trace everyone who was on the square at the same time. And again, this creates new risks and vulnerabilities for dissidents and protesters that were not present there in the, you know, pre-digital age.
Well, Yevgeny Morozov, you have your critics. In the New York Times, Roger Cohen recently wrote that you are brilliant, but dead wrong.
Yes.
He says what social media has done has been able to expose the great delusion that has led Western governments to buttress these Arab autocrats by saying that the only alternative is Islamic jihadists, because no, we see this driven to the streets by social media. We see middle class, un-Islamic, pro-Western young people in Tunisia and Cairo. And he says, you know, you should be putting your brilliance at the internet into helping them use social media.
Sure. First of all, actually, I am working with a lot of those very dissidents by being involved with George Soros' Open Society Institute.
George Soros' Open Society Institute,
yeah. But, you know, that column actually epitomizes the short-term simplistic thinking about the power of the internet, where the only focus is on what happens during protest. It's not focusing on how those governments are using this media to control their own people between protests. We should look at that as well, which is not my only point, right? Again, many people think that all I'm saying is I'm pointing out the dark side of the internet. I'm actually pointing out the dark side of internet freedom. Internet freedom is a policy objective for the U.S. government. As of last year, Hillary Clinton made this very big, important, seminal speech about internet freedom, where she declared that it's a new pillar of U.S. foreign policy. And you end up in situations where the State Department funds tools like Tor, as you mentioned, to help activists, you know, hide their traces online, while the Department of Homeland Security hates Tor because it also, you know, empowers terrorists and criminals. And you end up in this very complicated situations where the policy of the United States government is very incoherent. Where on the one hand, American politicians want to go down after WikiLeaks and the companies that host them. And on the other hand, they proclaim that they're campaigning for internet freedom.
Are you saying that there should be less freedoms? Are you saying there should be some way for Facebook, Twitter, these are, you know, American businesses, are you saying that there should be some requirement that they cut out Chinese governments or North Korean governments?
Of course I'm not saying that. I'm just saying that, you know, many of these companies have a huge role to play. They do not necessarily have the well-being of Chinese or Russian dissidents in mind. And the U.S. government has to be very careful in terms of how it structures its relationship with these companies. Right now, again, as I've said, the policy is very incoherent. On some days, the State Department condemns the fact that Cisco supplies technology that makes the Chinese censorship possible. On other days, the State Department hands out innovation awards to the very same company, Cisco. All I'm trying to do is to reveal some of the potential dangers. Because again, many of the authoritarian governments now look to Facebook and Twitter and they think, hey, if we are going to have a Facebook revolution or a Twitter revolution in our own backyard, why don't we just block Facebook and Twitter? Why are they doing that? In part because rhetorically, Washington and America have framed these issues very inconveniently for their own policy objectives.
Yeah.
When you proclaim what happened in Ukraine in 2004 as an orange revolution, no one will go and ban the color orange. No dictator will do that. When you frame it as a Twitter revolution, the consequences are much more different.
Yevgeny Morozov is contributing editor at Foreign Policy Magazine. His new book, again, The Net Delusion, The Dark Side of Internet Freedom. Thanks so much.
Thanks so much for having me.